Welcome to the Bruce Dickey Show. Welcome back to the Bruce Dickey Show here on AM 1390 and WFIW-FM, Fairfield, Illinois. I have a guest over there on the other side. Well, not in the studio, but on the phone. It's Gray Warner. He's the filmmaker of Ghosts of the Gold Rush, and he'll be in town tonight for the Rotary Travelogue series at 7:15 at the First Baptist Church. How you doing today, Gray?
Doing very well, glad to be here.
Glad to hear it. You have done how many films? You've done just a mess of them, haven't you?
Boy, I've done probably about 20 or so travel films, travel log films, and then I've done probably about 300 or more films for national parks and state parks, and a lot of adventure travel films, yeah, like Whitewater happening around the world, things like that. Yeah.
How do you get into that business? How do you get started in something like that? Because you've been doing it for a while now.
Well, I got into it by accident. I happened to be down in, I was going for my master's degree. I was going in to get a master's in geology, and but I ended up going down, taking a couple semesters off, and went down to Central America, and I was at the Mayan ruins of Tikal in Guatemala. But this was back in the day when, you know, getting down there was a real adventure, because uh-huh, there were, the guerrillas were fighting the government, and you know, there people in the streets with machine guns.
That's fun.
As you're driving down. Oh, yeah.
That sounds like a great time.
Yeah, it was, that part of it wasn't as much fun. The worst, though, were the government soldiers. The rebels weren't bad. They just looked and made sure we weren't, spies. We were just tourists. The government soldiers stole all of our Hershey bars when they inspected our,
well, that's not cool,
little camper van. Yeah.
You'd have thought they'd have taken your smokes instead.
I think they like the idea. They can get that anywhere, but Hershey buns were kind of a treat for them back then. And then I ran into a French documentary camera crew while I was there, and they were doing a film on Guatemala and the ruins, uh-huh, and the Mayan ruins, and I was intrigued. I tagged along with them for a day. They were very nice, unlike our common, you know, the portrayal of French, you know, being uppity and all of that, but they were really inviting, and they were interested that I was interested in what they were doing. And then I decided, geez, you know, this is fantastic, because I could make geology films if I wanted.
Sure.
As a matter of fact, I have. I've made a lot of films for most of the major national parks on, the ones that they show in the visitor center's, yeah, auditorium.
Well, that's impressive. The one coming up tonight, I'm really kind of intrigued by this. This seems like a good time, because I've traveled some of these areas, at least the San Juan Skyway in Colorado. It's beautiful. Tell me about Ghosts of the Gold Rush.
Well, amazing you mentioned San Juan Skyway. I filmed there, and actually we were going to include it in this program, but we just didn't have time.
Oh, really?
And it's incredible, you know, Camp Bird Mine and all kinds of places you can visit there. That's a unique story in its own right. But I was intrigued by, you know, a lot of these stories. I think everybody was, as we grew up, you know, watching Westerns and all of that. Were these stories really true? The stories of Tombstone, Arizona, the stories, yeah, of Bodie, And one of the most interesting stories is the story of Bannock, Montana. And it's really one of the best ghost towns you can visit. It's how we end the film with the, you know, how the word vigilante was formed. It's from
really?
The vigilance committees. Oh, yeah. You know, they hired, you know, this is a huge gold rush. Montana's first gold strike was in 1862, right in the heart of the Civil War. Well, 1861, actually. But it was, Civil War was raging, and in a way it was also raging out here in these ghost towns, because there were deserters from both the Union and the Confederate sides. And so in a way these wars were raging out west as well, but on a smaller scale.
Yeah.
So they hired a fellow who they knew was a lawman. What they didn't know that is that he'd just been released from San Quentin in California. And so their sheriff was started. I mean, he came into town, and right away he murdered somebody.
Yeah, he was running the town.
Oh yeah. And they acquitted him, and then elected him sheriff. And within a few months, you know, there were, you know, murders were starting here and there, and you know, as miners were waylaid on their way between. There were a couple of ghost towns up there now. Actually, one of them is not a ghost town, Virginia City, Montana.
Yeah.
But between Virginia City and Bannock, you know, it was just all mayhem. And so they formed the Vigilance Committee, and they became known as vigilantes, and that's where the word originated. So we'll see the town, we'll see the exact place where it all occurred. And
I did not realize that. How does one, I guess, what length of time occurs for a town to become a ghost town like that? I guess, I mean, there's a something there, and everybody just moves out? Because there's nobody there in Bannock now, right?
Well, there are people there, but they're rangers. Bannock is actually preserved as a Montana State Park.
Mm-hmm.
And the other really, truly great ghost towns are South Pass City and Bodie, California. They are all preserved one way or another by either, you know, Montana, Wyoming, or California State Parks, or somehow in their park system. But what happens is essentially, you know, just like every place, almost like Detroit almost became a ghost town. You know,
parts of it. Yeah, I mean, there are entire city, well, not city blocks, but sections of the city that nobody's living in, nobody goes to, or were.
That's true. It's true. And, you know, it's a matter of economics. Now, I live in Seattle, and it's a boom town.
Right.
You know, and right now I think, what are there, 68 skyscrapers going up right now.
Wow.
But we know that, you know, that can't go on forever. And the same thing that, you know, promoted these towns in the first place. So, you know, once that resource is gone, or once tech shifts to another part of the world, you know, these places become hollow inside. But, you know, some of these places sort of do live on. I mean, some of these towns aren't completely abandoned, but the stories are incredible. They really are. And
that's kind of what I wonder about. I'm talking with Gray Warner. He's putting on the film Ghosts of the Gold Rush at the First Baptist Church tonight. It's the Rotary Travelogue series. It's going to be at 7:15. What intrigues me about this, Gray, is the one town like a Tombstone or something that becomes a commercial mecca as a ghost town, where as opposed to I presume the ones protected by the park systems in Montana. And I gotta hope or presume that there are even towns out there in the middle of Nevada or in the middle of the desert in California that even just trading posts that are just abandoned and not even protected, and you can just stumble upon them.
Yeah, we'll be visiting those towns as well. You know, we're not going to be visiting just the highlights, not just the tourist attractions. Tombstone is a tourist attraction.
Yeah.
And really what happened there, of course, it was gunfight at the OK Corral.
Right.
And, you know, once it was made into movies and articles and books were written, you know, the Chamber of Commerce grabbed a hold of that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I just find it such an amazing place, because it's probably the only city in the country where the cemetery is actually owned and operated as a profit-making venture by the Chamber of Commerce.
Boudil. I like that.
Boudil.
You got it.
But the real story is just as fascinating. You know, how did Tombstone get its name? Well, we explain that, and it isn't what you might think. It had nothing to do with Boudil.
No kidding. Where is Robber's Roost?
Oh, Robber's Roost is... there's a robber's roost in Utah, and there's actually a couple of them around. Robber's Roost in Utah is, you know, Butch Cassidy and Sundance thing. It's actually a ranch. You know, one of the things that's interesting about Butch and Sundance is that, you know, they were befriended. And, you know, they actually worked on ranches when they weren't, when they weren't robbing.
When they were working, when they were working, sure.
And they had friends everywhere. Yeah. Butch Cassidy was born in Circleville, Utah, and he was Mormon. And he was protected by Mormons and ranches that were owned by Mormons all across the West. And he was just a congenial guy when he wasn't, you know, blowing up safes and things like that.
And not to stray too far off the subject, but do you believe the urban legend that Butch and Sundance, or at least Butch, came back later on and lived well into the early 1930s or something like that, and visited family and all that kind of business? You've heard those urban legends, haven't you?
Yeah, I have, and one of those is actually confirmed by, and I believe it was Butch's sister, but I'm going out on a limb here because I don't recall that part of the story as much as I do the rest of it, but no, they did have a, you know, they had the shootout down there in Bolivia and all that.
I was going to say, the Bolivians claim they got him.
I believe that they may have gotten one of them.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't embrace too many conspiracy theories. I look for the evidence. And I think that's what you'll find in this. This is not really a film about, you know, theories. And,
And
I don't bring up much in this case. But, you know, about what actually happened. But, you know, the interesting thing is that, you know, there's so many stories, and separating the fact from fiction is a little difficult from time to time. But the real truth of what happened, believe me, you know, when we say the Wild West, it really was wild. For instance, like at Bannock, you know, the vigilantes, did they go overboard a little bit? Within a matter of months, they'd hung 138 people.
I was thinking that that was part of that. I must be confused. I was thinking that was that, like, the late 1910s, early 1920s Montana deal, war out there in Montana. But this is earlier than that, isn't it?
Yeah, this is right in the heart of the Civil War, and most of the real excitement happened.
I hadn't heard about this one. That's really cool.
You know, I mean, there's so many stories, but you know what's so amazing is that so many of these places are intact, either partially or completely intact. Bannock, Bodie, South Pasadena, as I mentioned before, and others. And you don't have to use too much imagination, you know, to see what happened and why it happened.
How about that?
And it's really an amazing look into the real history. And what I was amazed at is the technology was in some ways so advanced. You know, it really was gold and silver that pushed the United States to the forefront of not only mining technology, but, you know, the wealth that could be made was immense. You know, it's interesting. My mother grew up in a town in Washington State, and which was run by John D. Rockefeller, one of his big investments. It was Monte Cristo, the biggest gold strike in Washington State. And she died just 3.5 years ago at 100. But she grew up in this town, and my grandmother worked there as a cook. And the fellow selling lots for John D. Rockefeller was Donald Trump's grandfather.
It all comes around, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And
he was
on the wall throughout the West. I mean, this is not a political comment.
Sure.
But you can check it out. He was known throughout the Northwest, where he made a lot of money as sort of a swindler.
Oh, he was.
So, I'm not saying that this is genetic or anything, mind you.
It's just an interesting story
that, you know, just happened to pop up, you know, lately. So
that's pretty good. Gray, how do you get on your, how do you get your ideas, and how do you get what made you want to make Ghosts of the Gold Rush?
Well, partly because of my mother, because she grew up in this town that no longer exists. And it was, you know, I'd visited it, you know, years gone by, but over the years it's finally deteriorated and to the point, but of just not being there.
Yeah.
But you know, when I was young, my very first hike was to in Washington State, was to a place called Goat Lake, And I was amazed because right at the very base of this, it's an alpine lake, high, high up, you know, glaciers at the end of it. And above the glaciers and going right to the top of the mountain was the Foggy Mountain Mine. And they were mining gold up there, and then they'd ship it across the lake to the town at the other end of the lake where it would be concentrated, and then they'd ship it on to a smelter. But it was just amazing, a spider web of, here you are in the middle of North Cascades of Washington State, close to the Canadian border. They get more snow than any place in the world. They were miners that literally, they drilled mine shafts and adits, as they call them, on sheer cliffs, you know, 3,000-foot-high cliffs to get to the gold.
Wow.
But, I mean, you know, one false step and, you know, you're flying.
That's amazing. So your film, did you get, were they able to let you out there and film on those kind of precipices? And Wow.
Yeah. No, I have, you'll see some amazing stories, like the story of honey, you might have heard of Butterfield, and there's several stations along the route. We're going to be visiting one of them, mm-hmm. the Butterfield Express, which was short-lived. But, you know, the stories in the Southwest are so amazing because they're all tied to one thing, and that's Apache terrorism.
And, really?
You know, these towns were being attacked and cut off, and the only way they could send messages was by heliograph, and the armies had stationed men on the top of mountain points, and they would send messages from mountaintop to mountaintop to let people know that the Apache were coming.
No kidding.
Yeah, because all the telegraph lines were cut, all the towns were isolated, and we're talking about, you know, they had to bring in buffalo soldiers who were... and boy, these guys fiercely defended. They were among the best soldiers in the West.
They were all
ex-slaves, if you will, brought in from the liberated South. And boy, it was, especially in the 1870s and early 1880s, you know, we depict Victorio and Geronimo. We have actual photographs. We visit Fort Bowie, where the army went after the Apache and where Geronimo was finally taken in, and, you know, where he lost his freedom.
Yeah.
See these places where all this history of the Wild West unfolded.
Well, Gray, I tell you what, it sounds like you'll be there to answer questions before and after, I presume, right?
Well, usually during intermission and afterwards.
Okay.
Certainly, yeah. That's one of the things I like about a live show, that you can actually talk to people and answer their questions then and there.
Well, that's cool.
Assuming you know the answers.
Well, you can make something up though if you don't know the answer, Gray.
I didn't catch that.
I said you can make something up if you don't know the answers to the questions, Gray.
Well, I'm pretty honest with people, you know. I'll let them know if I'm lying or not, you know.
Well, it sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun, folks. That's Gray Warner. He's got the Rotary Travelogue series tonight, Ghosts of the Gold Rush, and they're going to be at the First Baptist Church here in Fairfield at 7:15. Gray, have a great time, and I really appreciate your time this morning on the Bruce Dickey Show.
Well, thanks so much, and I hope people will enjoy it. Well, I know they will.
I agree with you. It sounds wonderful. That's Gray Warner. Thanks, Gray. Talk to you soon. Have a great day.
Thank you.
I'll see you. We got more Bruce Dickey Show coming up. Going to play some more music.